Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of The Debate, coming your way from Press TV headquarters in Tehran with me, your host, Behrouz Najafi. A UN Palestinian rights official has called for a boycott of all products made in Israeli settlements as a step to put an end to Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands. The U.S. House of Representatives has been brushing aside democratic voices of dissent over the U.S. policy in the Middle East. The House has passed a bipartisan resolution condemning the Boycott Israel movement, BDS. Now, some European states have also taken action against the movement. This while Tel Aviv is grabbing more and more Palestinian land in the occupied West Bank. Now, what's behind the blatant U.S. backing for an occupier regime? And how could the Israeli crimes and violations against Palestinians be ignored? Let's first watch a report on that topic.
For the past 50 years, UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Michael Link, has demanded that the international community impose a ban on all products made in Israeli settlements. Link said the ban is aimed at ending Israel's occupation of the West Bank. Link has in the past urged economic sanctions against Israel, calling for the international community to step up pressure on Tel Aviv. He also noted that the international community should issue a clarion call to the UN to complete and release a database on businesses dealing with the illegal settlements. The UN Human Rights Council has repeatedly delayed the release of a report about companies doing business in Israeli settlements, which was originally expected to be published in 2017. The list has been said to include Israeli banks, supermarkets, restaurant chains, and security firms, as well as the international giants that provide equipment or services used to build or maintain settlements. A movement called Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Against Israel is also active across the globe, with its members staging nonviolent protests against Israel's atrocities against Palestinians. The movement's main mission is to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians. In recent years, Israel's diplomatic missions have made countering the BDS a priority and have moved to ban groups that support the movement. Boycotting Israel in different fields at an international level comes as the United States has stepped up its unflinching support for the regime. A series of dramatic announcements by the Trump administration, including shutting the Palestinian diplomatic office in Washington, cutting aid to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, and trying to sideline the organization, bear witness to such a support. U.S. President Donald Trump has also recognized Israel's rule over parts of the Golan Heights which the regime occupied in 1967. While not relating directly to the Palestinian territories, the move signals that the Trump administration does not necessarily feel bound by the international law principle that bans acquisition of territory by force. More than 2 years after Trump promised a plan to end the decades-long Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the first stage of the so-called peace plan was unveiled at an economic workshop in Bahrain in June. In the end, the so-called deal of the century was not more than a failed clearance sale. Palestinian people and their leaders condemned the move. Even in Israel, local media played down the gathering. Israel's settlement projects are illegal under international law. However, the regime has been expanding them in the past years. In a recent move, Israel advanced plans for the construction of 251 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. Figures show that Israel's expansion of settlements has grown since U.S. President Donald Trump took office in 2016. With Israel's constant violations of international law and the U.S. continuous support for the regime, boycotting Israel seems to be the least that the international community can do in support of the Palestinians' rights and in opposition to Israel's ongoing occupation.
Time now to discuss the issue. Joining me in this debate will be author and Middle East expert Kevin Barrett, who's joining us out of Madison, and journalist and political analyst Maxim Dover from New York. Good to have both of you. Let's go to Kevin first. On the back of Israeli policies, more and more settlements are being built on Palestinian land, as you know. The West Bank is shrinking, and the world is sitting idle by, except for the U.S., of course, who's put full support behind Tel Aviv's expansionist policies. Let's have your comments.
Well, Israel has gone into a all-out kind of radical Likudnik expansion mode in the wake of the September 11th, 2001 neoconservative Zionist false flag. Abundant evidence shows that Zionists were part of the planning and perhaps the key force behind the planning of the September 11th, 2001 coup d'etat. People who are curious about this could go to UNZ.com, U-N-Z, and look for the article Israel Did 9/11 by Laurent Guyonneau. They could read Christopher Bolin's book Solving 9/11, which is available free online as a PDF. And It's been pretty obvious to most of us in the 9/11 truth movement since 2005, 2006, that Israel played a big role in this. And it should be obvious to everyone. They were the big winner. They openly celebrated. And the reason was that there was a plan afoot. It was expressed in Benjamin Netanyahu's Clean Break document, which was written by essentially the same people. They wrote that in 1996. And then just a few years later, in September of 2000, the same people wrote the Rebuilding America's Defenses document calling for a quote-unquote new Pearl Harbor to trick the United States into regime change wars against Israel's enemies, specifically the seven countries in 5 years that were going to be overthrown as part of the 9/11 Zionist coup d'etat. This according to Richard Clark, the general who was informed of it by neoconservatives shortly after 9/11. So since 2001, we've been living in this new world that was Netanyahu's idea to free Zionism to go all out against its Palestinian enemies and its regional enemies in order to steal more land, to get this Lebensraum. And ultimately, they're moving towards the greater Israel plan. The Zionists, or some of them anyway, believe that God gave them all of the land between the Nile and the Euphrates. And not one hectare of that will they give up. And this is, of course, a recipe for endless war. And the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, the oppression of the Palestinians, is part and parcel of this crazy religious, millenarian, messianic, Zionist plot. It's been around for 300, 400 years, since the days of Rabbi Abarbanel, the days of Shabtai Zvi, the false messiah, and the first Zionist 300 years ago, and his disciple, the Satanist, Jacob Frank. This is a long-term plan, and it's pushing the world towards endless crisis, and it's true the least the world can do is to respond to this by saying no and beginning with a boycott on Israeli products.
And now over to New York. Maxine, American lawmakers oppose the activities of the BDS. Also, the White House and lawmakers from both sides of the aisle have promised unwavering support for Israel at the American Israel Public Affairs Committee's annual conference in Washington, D.C. Now, what does the U.S. gain from its sustained support for an Occupy regime?
Let's begin with debunking these stupid, far proven, foolish conspiracy theories that quotes have been given from Madison. These are foolish conspiracy theories that have zero basis in any fact. The tragedy of 9/11, the massive tragedy of 9/11, not only for the 3,000 Americans and other and international citizens who died, is one that has continued in the wake of that tragedy. And we have seen thousands of young men and women on every side injured in support of these horrendous conspiracy theories and of people who would take normal lifestyles and turn them into terror lifestyles. BDS is a kind of economic warfare that should not exist. Boycott, the name boycott comes from the first strikes carried out by workers in England. A strike, a boycott, is only successful when there is some good intention on both sides. We've recently had a massive strike of auto workers, and the closure of the strike was both sides negotiating a settlement that satisfied. What Mr. Link has said, Michael Link has said about forcing a boycott ignores the reality on the ground. The reality on the ground is that Gaza and the Palestinian people have been injured by the dictates of Hamas, by the terror use of amazingly generous funds to create terror tunnels, to create underground terror networks that have nothing to do with bettering the life of the Palestinian and specifically of the Gazan, of the people in Gaza. The people in Gaza could have the homes, could have the electricity they need if it weren't being siphoned off into horrendous mass terror undertakings that benefit no one No one except Hamas. Where is all this money going? Where is the money that should be building schools and shopping centers and hospitals and electrical plants and water plants, all of which are available? And if the money were being spent to aid the Gazan people, then they would have a normal life and not be stuck under the terror rule of Hamas, which cares nothing about the people, which cares only about its little cadre of leaders. How many millions did Arafat siphon off? Anybody check the bank accounts in Paris? These are monies that should have been in the hands of the Palestinian people so that they could not boycott the Israelis who are living in the West Bank, but rather work with them. I've been in some of those factories where Palestinians and Israelis sit together, work together, do high tech together, and then they all go home to their car, to their cars, which are identical, the same Subarus and the same SUVs, only with different license plates. But the Palestinians who are working with the Israelis are creating normal lives for both, are creating proper lives for their families on both sides. And that's what we have to look for, not BDS, not boycotting. Who suffers? The Palestinians who are working in the businesses, whether they're Israeli-owned or Palestinian-owned. Boycott? They're not going to have a salary. They're not going to have food on their children's tables. That's what boycott does. It destroys lives.
Okay, now, Kevin, do you want to have your reaction?
Sure. Well, first, the idea that the truth about September 11th, 2001 is a quote-unquote conspiracy theory, which is essentially all the people who defend the official story about it ever say, they never get into the actual debate about the facts, is a real calumny. And indeed, the previous human rights administrator for the Palestinian territories at the UN, Richard Falk, who is one of the world's leading specialists in international law, he is Jewish himself, he is on the record supporting the conclusions of Dr. David Ray Griffin that September 11th was indeed a neoconservative coup d'etat, and that they blew up the World Trade Center with explosives, which anybody with eyes can see. Simply look at the footage or watch Building 7 come straight down in 6.5 seconds and look at the University of Alaska study that just came out. So that's not a conspiracy theory, Maxine. That's just the truth. And as for this notion that the only difference between the Palestinians' cars and the Jewish Israelis' cars is the license plates, that's pretty interesting, because you're admitting that, in fact, based on your race, you're given a different set of license plates. Why is that? Well, that's because in Israel, Jews are the master race. They're the Ubermenschen, and the Palestinians are the Untermenschen, they're the equivalent of the Jews in Nazi Germany. They're given different license plates because they're not allowed to drive on the same roads. They can't get through the checkpoints. They have to go through these long checkpoints. They are economically massively disadvantaged. They're not driving the fancy Subarus and SUVs. They're much poorer than the average Jewish people. And this is just we're talking about the so-called, the Arab citizens of Israel. But if you get into the people who were ethnically cleansed and expelled from their homes and had all their homes and land stolen in 1948 and then again in 1967 and ongoing today, most of those people have been herded into the world's biggest outdoor concentration camp, the Gaza Strip, or they're languishing in concentration camps in other countries waiting to go home. As the United Nations has insisted, the minute after that genocide in 1948, when the Jews who invaded and colonized and committed genocide in occupied Palestine took over, the United Nations immediately said that every single one of those refugees must immediately have the right to go home and not only get all of their property back, but also be reimbursed for their suffering. Israel has been violating that long series of United Nations resolutions to that effect ever since then, right up until today. And the vast majority of Palestinians are living in extreme destitution and poverty, and even the privileged minority that didn't get slaughtered or expelled, and you know, the 20% of people in the so-called state of Israel who are of Palestinian ethnicity, they're considered racial inferiors under Israeli law. They cannot live in the best neighborhoods, they cannot drive on the best roads, and they have a whole separate list of rights than the privileged Jewish class. So Israel is the last apartheid racist, officially racist state in the world, and Netanyahu just insisted on that by passing this new so-called nation-state law, making Israel a land of, by, and for only the Jews, rather as Hitler wanted Nazi Germany to be of, by, and for only the Aryan Germans. That's the kind of country, so-called country, that the Zionist entity has become.
Right. Now, Maxine.
Let me respond.
Yeah, briefly, please.
About your picking up on the difference in license plates. If I have a residence in New York, I do not have the same license plate as you do with a residence in Madison, Wisconsin. It's a territorial, not a socioeconomic differential.
It's based on who your mother is. If your mother's Jewish, you are a master race. If your mother isn't Jewish, you are inferior.
Jewish and untrue. Untrue. Okay, the 20% of the population of Israel who have Arab ethnicity live in the same way that any Jew.
They do not have equality under the law.
There are neighborhoods.
Okay, I think we've discussed that point. Now, let's get on with the other question. Maxine, there's been wide opposition to what America calls anti-Semitic moves and words. You know, U.S. Democrat representatives, Ms. Tlaib and also Ms. Omar, have been the target of immense criticisms, you know, of their comments regarding Israel. President Trump has even accused them of being anti-American and suggested they, quote, go back to their home countries. Let's have your take.
My take on the comment by the president is that it is an uneducated response to opinions with which he doesn't agree. His appropriate take, in my opinion, would be to provide the education that would create an opinion closer to what he likes, if that's his goal, but certainly not to go back to where you came from. That is unacceptable, and no thinking American, perhaps other than some of the members of the administration, would say otherwise. This is not an American approach, and this is not appropriate. But with regard to the increase in anti-Semitism, if you have a Hamas leader standing in front of UN headquarters in Gaza and saying, go and kill Jews wherever you find them, this is also not acceptable. And this is not a way of civil society. This is the ultimate threat to normal life. In 2 days, in several days' time, on October 27th, we will memorialize the slaughter of the Jews who were at worship in Pittsburgh. It's a reminder that civil society needs to protect everyone. It needs to protect the people who were slaughtered in New Zealand in the mosque. It needs to protect those who were slaughtered in a church. It needs to protect Jews who are at worship in Pittsburgh or in California, anywhere. And these threats and these call out of conspiracy theories fire those whose response to difference is hate.
Okay, let's go back to the main topic now.
If you respond to difference with hate, you have tragedy.
Okay. Now, Kevin, Michael Link, you know, UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, he has called for an international ban on products made in Israeli settlements. And the official regards this as a step toward ending Israel's 52-year occupation of the West Bank. Is this sufficient?
Well, many would argue that all of Palestine is under occupation, and they would argue that we shouldn't be making this distinction between the territories stolen by the Zionists in 1967 and the territories stolen by the Zionists in 1948. We should be boycotting all of the occupied territories, which is all of occupied Palestine. But there's also an argument that, given the fact that the opinion, both in Israel itself And in Western countries, including among much of the Jewish population in Western countries, is very much committed to what they call the existence of Israel, but is not so committed to endless Likudnik Netanyahu-style expansionism. One could argue that boycotting the territories stolen in the war of aggression of 1967, focusing on those territories, would be politically more advantageous because it allows the BDS movement to bring a lot of people on board, including possibly the majority of the Jewish population here in the United States and a significant part of the Jewish population even in Israel, where a lot of them are just fed up with these settlers who are demanding all kinds of special rights, privileges, and money from the rest of the Israelis in order to go out and behave like cowboys massacring Indians or worse. So I think there's something to be said for this proposal. And I wonder whether Maxine would agree that with the majority of American Jews, that there shouldn't be any settlements, that Israel should go back to its pre-1967 borders and live in peace with its neighbors, which is really the one way that we could actually have a permanent state called Israel.
Mm-hmm. Now, Maxine.
Well, I appreciate your acknowledgement that there should be a permanent state called Israel.
I didn't hear that, Maxine.
That there should also be a permanent state for the Palestinian people. I am a proponent of the two-state solution. However, the realities here are that there is a need to change such things as the Hamas charter, which you and I can believe what we wish, but it's Hamas that is controlling the military and the terror operations and says that the state of Israel should not exist. That needs to be changed. The basic philosophy of those who would not consider the rights of Israel to exist must be changed.
Okay, Maxine, we are running out of time.
Education needs to be changed. Children cannot be taught that
okay,
they're...
Maxine, if you allow me, I should give Kevin also 1 minute to complete his comments.
Of course.
Well, I do appreciate Maxine essentially acknowledging that the Zionists should withdraw from all of the territory that they stole in the 1967 war of aggression, because that is essentially the unanimous position of not only the entire international community, but even really a majority of Jewish people in the West who have a tremendous support of Israel in their hearts, but recognize that what's been happening since 1967 is ugly and unfair and unjust. So maybe we could have a meeting of the minds there. I agree, Hamas should be willing to engage in essentially a permanent cessation of all forms of violence in return for that complete and absolute and total withdrawal from all of the territory stolen in 1967. I agree completely with that. And I also agree that all parties, Palestinians and Israelis, should do their utmost to avoid targeting civilians in any way, shape, or form. Unfortunately, it's Israel that mostly does that.
All right, Kevin, we're out of time. Let me thank our guests, author and Middle East expert Kevin Baer from Edison and journalist and political analyst Maxine Dover from New York. Thank you for watching this program. We'll see you next time. Thank you.